Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Laura. Hi, I'm Laura, a grateful member of Overeaters Anonymous, and I'm an overeater.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, everybody. It's really been great to come tonight. Thank you, Lee Fan, for asking me, and I just so appreciate being able to participate in my own recovery, and I also am seeing familiar faces, and I have a very small home group that I go to, and there's someone here from my home group, so I was very pleased to see that. I will just go into my story, what it was like, what brought me here, and what it's like today. I never had a healthy relationship with food. I never knew how to do food. It's like, I just never did. And, you know, my mother always dieted. I think my first diet was when I was 12. I mean, I was always sort of just, it never was right. And I there was this one picture, there was a time in my life that I just thought I was so fat. And I found this picture of myself at that time, and I was just like a rail. Like, I was tall and thin. And that just that, you know, mind, this is a disease of the mind, spirit and body, and that just that mind picture that I had. I would steal food. I remember we had a freezer out on the porch. I lived on a farm, and we had a freezer, and my mom kept the Girl Scout cookies in the far left-hand corner, down way deep. And I'd have to lean my whole body all the way in, like you're almost falling in, to get those Girl Scout cookies. So I don't know, focusing on my body and focusing on food and focusing on negativity, that was the natural course of life. I didn't know any other way. And my mother, I guess, is the main person I sort of learned that from. But so that's kind of how I grew up. And I... I'll fast forward to some other memories of just how I stole, like, you know, the things that you think you're never going to do, but you steal or eat out of the garbage, or, you know, those things that we do. I worked in a retail environment, and so there's cameras. But I would just make these trips from my office to the secretary's desk, where there was a bowl of candy, and, you know, just, and it would cross my mind, like, if the loss prevention people are watching right now, they must be wondering why I'm making a 10th trip to this desk to get this candy. So that, and then, you know, I'd get gifts at around holidays, and I'd get candy. And I would, you know, eat a piece of it and swear I wouldn't eat any more, and then, of course, eat three more. And then I would put it in the garbage because I'd throw it away because now I'm not going to have any more. And then, of course, I would have to get it out of the garbage. And so I think I had a problem with food, but I did not know that. It's just, again, kind of how I live. And I am... You know, I'll tell you how I got here. I'll back up. I went to an Overeaters Anonymous meeting for the first time, and it was in Hollywood. And I went because I noticed I was living with a boyfriend at the time, and I noticed I could not stop thinking about the ice cream in the freezer. Could not stop thinking about it. So I went to this Overeaters Anonymous meeting and cried and related, but never went back. And then I started on a journey and on another 12-step program. And you know, I guess you know, God gives you the path that you need. I needed to feel safe first, I guess. I needed to get some tools under my belt. I needed to kind of learn how to cope and be in life and show up, because God forbid I would give up food. And so fast forward to some real demoralization that got me here. I was doing a one of the commercial diets where you get special foods and you do this commercial diet. And I had done that probably 20 times. I mean, I'd done it throughout my life. But this time was a little different because I started it and I knew it would work because it always did work. I knew it would work. I'd probably lose 15, 20 pounds. But this time I went into it very despairingly because I knew at the end of it working, I would have no idea what to do. And I was so demoralized by the thought that this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do 3 week to 6 week increments of my life until I'm 70. You know, I just had this, I could just see the rest of my life that I was going to do these diets and they would work and I would feel okay and then I would have no idea how to eat food again and then I would have to do it over and over and over again. So that happened in the summer of 2006 where I was doing that diet and yes, it worked. And yet it didn't work after I was done. And then I got really sick. I was sick in September, and my brother had given me a book, and it was about letting go of sugar and flour and how to get healthy and all of this. So I was reading this book, and I was remembering that I had this sense about my body when I was, like, in my teens, that I had no business eating sugar and flour and health, but I had no capability of doing anything about it at that point. So I thought, okay, I'll do it now. You know, I will go off sugar and flour, and I'm so sick, this will help me heal. And it did. I got better. This is in September, and I got better. But about 2 months later, it was Halloween. Yes, the season. Thus it begins. So what happened around Halloween, it's so funny, it's not even really directly related to Halloween, but again, back in my retail environment, we had a vendor drop off candies that were supposed to be samples to give out to customers, but they were free food, that's always better than just food, free food, and they were available, you know, if I snuck them, and they were incredibly rich, so I ate just, I would say 30 of these things. I just ate so many of these things that I just really almost made myself sick. So that ended my willing myself to be off of sugar and white flour. It was like, okay, it was done. So that was my first crash and burn at that moment of trying to do it myself. Then I went on a trip and with a bunch of people, and we went out to dinner, and I decided not to eat dinner. Controlling and managing, but they ordered dessert for the table, and it sat in front of me, and I ate virtually the whole dessert. And that night, the first time really that I'd ever experienced like not even being able to sleep because I was so full. And so here I had kind of a 1-2 punch or a back-to-back moments of demoralization of how much I could not do this. Then I went to a retreat, and it was a retreat for my other program, but the speaker had an OA element to her program. And even before I knew that, I saw a friend I knew in the rooms, and she had been transformed. She, Lee Sam's nodding because she knows this person. It makes me just teary to have that connection about her because she was such a beacon. It was just... It's like, what happened? And she had lost 70 pounds, and she had been she had been coming to OA. And I just was so struck by, you know, seeing her walk toward me. And then to have the speaker have an OA part to her program, to her pitch and her story, it was, again, the 1-2 punch of recovery this time, where I just was getting this message. And so I was sitting in a workshop, and we're so dramatic. I turned to the person next to me and I said, I think I have to go to OA. And she said, right now? So, no, I didn't have to go right that second. So that was like early November. And I knew I could not be abstinent through Thanksgiving. I mean, come on. There's like no way I could do Thanksgiving. But I was so desperate by this time, I realized I had to get to a meeting of OA. So I came to my first meeting November 19th, 2006. And who should be there but the woman who had been the beacon at the conference. And I went to the meeting, was at the meeting, but it was afterwards that she came up and gave me a hug, and I'm so glad you're here. And I'm not even sure how it quite happened, but she sort of said, do you want to call me? And so I said, yes, you know, I'm trained, I know, you do outreach calls, you call people. But it's the next thing that she said, which was, well, why don't you call me tomorrow at 6 a.m.? And I burst into tears, not because really I was going to call somebody at 6 a.m., but it was because I was going to call somebody at 6 a.m. I mean, I knew I was licked. I knew I was beat if I was going to be that willing to call somebody at 6 a.m. the next morning. So, you know, that was kind of my start of my journey in this program, and I have been very, very blessed to have had abstinence from the day I started in this program. I know that's not everyone's story, but I'm so grateful. And, you know, a meeting I went to for a long, long time was Recovery from Relapse was the name of the meeting. And I was so grateful for that meeting because I really wanted to hear those stories of recovery from relapse because I knew I had the identification. I just felt like I'd relapsed my whole life. I just fortunately didn't relapse once I got into the program. But I really needed to hear those stories of relapse and that, like, there's no way out of this disease. Like, just the struggle and, again, that demoralization. And I really had a very healthy fear of my disease when I got here. You know, because they kind of say, you know, at least I've learned in, you know, the spiritual path, you know, that you're not, you know, if you're in fear, you're not in faith, and sort of fear has a bad rap in our world. And I actually think there's a healthy form of fear. I mean, humans have fear to protect ourselves. And I think I had the healthy form of fear, just a huge respect for this disease. Because I really got it that my abstinence was a treasure. Like, it was just to be protected, and it was to be respected, and it was to not be taken for granted. And, you know, the first result that I got from recovery was having the fog lift. Could not believe, it's like colors got brighter, the lights came on. I mean, I could not believe the difference. I couldn't believe how much food was masking me and separating me from the world. And then the other piece I got from that is it was completely separating me from God. And I think that's why I said I had to have, I had 12 years of recovery in that other program before I got here. And I think I needed that level of safety and tools because, oh my God, it's a big scary world out there without food. Like, you know, my God, how do you do it? And I didn't realize that peanut M&Ms were separating me from God. No wonder it was so scary. I was just relying on peanut M&Ms, and here's God over here. You know, it's like that whole thing, alcoholic death or God? Let's debate, you know, peanut M&Ms or God? And, you know, I went for the peanut M&Ms for years. And so now I had this opportunity to have God really in my life and start that feeling of I could be safe, you know, with God and without food. And, you know, that first year in let me tell you my abstinence. It's 3 meals a day, up to two snacks. I don't necessarily always have the two snacks. No sugar and no white flour. And then my food plan can include, like, I don't do fried foods and I don't even do wheat bread. But I like not having them on my abstinence list because someday I might want to have wheat bread. And that just makes me happy that someday I could have wheat bread if I wanted to. So So, you know, and that's the other piece about this program and working the program and staying in touch with my fellows and doing the things we do, staying in touch with my sponsor, going to meetings, is I really need to not forget that I'm an overeater. Again, I've been blessed with abstinence since the day I walked into the rooms, but I never want to forget that I'm an overeater. And, you know, some of the things that remind me, and particularly early on in my recovery, is I'd get so angry if the meal wouldn't go right. You know, if I misjudged somehow, or it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, or there wasn't enough. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, if there wasn't enough. You know, and I got tools like, it's only one meal. And that, you know, some of this stuff is so obvious that it's like earth-shattering. It's like, oh, right, it's only one meal. I'm going to have another meal, you know, tomorrow morning or in 4 hours. I mean, it's like it's not the crisis, because I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm going to die if I don't have the food I need. So, and then things like I have had my full allotment of chocolate. I just ate it in the first half of my life instead of, you know, spacing it out through the whole life. I'm not deprived. I do not have less chocolate than anyone else. I just did my whole ration of chocolate. So, you know, that helps. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, and I also ate big meals. I mean, now I was eating nourishing meals, but I wasn't measuring or doing it. I was just having these big, healthy meals and losing weight and having this whole different experience with food. And because I was handing over my food to my sponsor in the morning, it lifted that whole equation, that whole mathematics that I used to do. If I eat this, then I won't eat that. And then if I have a candy bar, then for the next 3 days I'm going to have salad. And, you know, just so busy calculating food. Meanwhile, I didn't use any facts and figures like calories or, you know, exercise. You know, I didn't do anything. I just the head going and going and going and going. So that was all lifted because I gave my food away to my sponsor in the morning, and then I knew it was done. I didn't have to think about the food anymore. And I didn't have to think about the food, but if life happened and there was a change, I could text her or call her, or, you know, I had lost the ability to make decisions about food. That was my surrender. I lost the ability to make decisions about food, and I had turned that over to a sponsor and to my God. And when I was first new in program, it was more to my sponsor than to God. Just really having that phone call and figuring it out and what's working and what's not. And I remember one day I had a reaction. I was really despairing, negative, and hopeless on my phone call with my sponsor. So she introduced a major new idea to me. She said, "What did you eat yesterday?" I had never made that connection, that my crazy head and my crazy emotion could be due to my physical allergy to food. And what happened is I had gone to a fast food place and gotten rice, but not knowing that it was white rice and not, you know, I just was so new at that time, I hadn't thought about the difference. And the sugar in the white rice had triggered me. So that was a revelation. Like, oh, maybe my emotions don't drive my eating. Maybe my eating can drive my emotions. So again, it was another piece of information that I have a disease. Like, it's not just me creating this or making this up. This is really a disease that I need to treat and need to be conscious of and be aware of. I think I want to fast forward a little bit. Actually, no. Let me go over this piece, because it's a pretty amazing piece of my story. So not only did I have the fog lift, which was a major revelation and comfort and new experience of life. And that first year, I probably had all my defects kind of stir up again. But the difference was I was aware of them. I had feelings around them. I wasn't numbed out. And they didn't last as long. I would just kind of act out, and then I would go on and have some tools and recovery that I could use. So that was sort of, I got all that out of my system. And then I had this experience of surrendering Well, I had this little thought in my head that popped up, and this is in the fall of 2007. So I'd been abstinent almost a year. And the thought occurred to me, maybe I would like to have a partner in my life. I just never had really allowed that. I'd been married centuries before. It was like 15, 20 years. It'd been a long time. And it had been very, very sick relationship and marriage. And I hadn't really dated very much. And I realized that little moment of thought, I had just shut that out, thinking, I don't need that. I don't want that. And I'm okay without that. In some ways, that served me well. I got some recovery and sense of self. But on the other hand, I wasn't participating in that area of my life. And then that Christmas, I participated in a prayer group, and we did prayers for each other at the end of the year for the new year. And I prayed for a healthy relationship with men. I didn't pray for a relationship. I didn't pray for the love of my life. I just prayed for a healthy relationship with men because I had a great fear of men, and they were aliens. I just didn't know how to talk to them. I didn't know where they were coming from. Fear and anger, that's all I kind of associated with men. And so right after that prayer, I started noticing men at work who were just really kind people. I realized my boss was really kind and I could talk to him. And a couple of other men at work, I realized, I do have a relationship with a man and he's okay and I can talk to him. So just little inklings of, I can be with men, I can talk with men, I am okay, I am safe. And then I went to a wedding and downset a man. And it was like we were in mid-sentence the moment he sat down. And so we were just chattering along, and at one point he said, at one point I told him, this is how like completely open I was, like, so as he puts it, our hearts were so open, like God almost played a trick. He opened our hearts so much that we by accident let each other in, because we both have a history that's not so pretty in that area. And so I said to him, I really don't date. I don't know. It's probably something about me. I'm probably shutting people out or shutting men out. And he goes, like, duh. And I blushed, because he was saying, obviously, he was saying, you're beautiful and I find you attractive. And just in that duh, of course it's you because you should be dating. And so we met at that wedding. And the next weekend I was at a women's retreat. And I just had a complete and utter surrender. Well, let me back up. At the end of that night, it was just such a sweet night. I wasn't planning on anything. There was no exchange of numbers or anything like that. So then you fast forward to the next weekend. It was a women's retreat, and I just had this complete surrender where I was just done. I did this share with the group that just said, God, I can't improve anymore. This is it. This is the improved version. I mean, this is all I've got. This is all you've got. I'm just so done. And I can't make myself any better for any man out there. This is it. And I even had one of the women come up later and just say something like, I relate, or, and I just like snapped her head off. I was just like so like raw with being done. Like I sort almost like I just, all of you go away because I'm so done. And then later that day I laid down and slept for like 3 hours. And then a long timer came, and she has really bad knees, but she got down on her knees on the floor with me where I was sleeping, and I was awake by now. And and she was just like, well, maybe you should, just go home. Go back to family, leave Los Angeles. Just, maybe you are done. And it was just another level of surrender with someone I really, really loved. And so that event. So I am just now, as you can tell, I'm done, right? So 2 weeks later, this man calls that I'd met at the wedding. And this man is my husband today. And, I fast forward through a lot of that, but it was, we met that, we started dating, and I had to pray a lot every time he came to the door. I had to be willing to show up, even though I was scared. And I realized I trusted him. I realized he trusted me. That was almost even bigger. Like, he didn't feel jealousy and stuff. I'd always had that kind of vibe, and he was completely open. I remember one time I said to him, you know, I really admire your confidence. And he said, oh, that's my faith. It's like, wow, I want that faith. That his faith was very attractive, you know. And that's, you know, he's in recovery, and it's just been a wonderful, wonderful journey. We got married last February, a year ago February, so we're a little over a year married. And we had the wedding of our dreams. We saved for it and did it ourselves, and it was just the best love fest for that's what I thought of it. It's, this is a party for everyone I love, you know, and all my family came, and it was just beautiful. And I'll now tell you a little bit about what the last 6 months have been like. No, that segue's not good, because my husband is not the issue at all. It's been fabulous. I love getting to know him. I really call it an adventure. It's truly an adventure to be that close to someone else's life, and then to allow myself to be seen that clearly, because that was a big thing. I always wanted to be hidden, and I never wanted someone to see me. And I never wanted to be caught. You know, if you're stealing food and doing all the stuff I was doing, you don't really want to be caught. And, you know, now I'm caught. My husband sees things about me, but I'm really getting to learn even further and more deeply that I am loved and I am lovable just by being here, just by being on the earth. I deserve, I'm lovable. And he knows me and loves me. You know, what more can you say? That's just an amazing gift. And that's what I always remember. It's a gift from God. It's a complete gift from God. And all I have to do is keep my relationship with God strong. And then the rest of it just all happens. But what happened at the beginning of this year is I got sick. I could not shake the flu. Most people couldn't. It just seemed to just hang on. So that's why I didn't think it was any different. Like, everybody else couldn't shake it either. But mine I couldn't shake, so that by the time, like 2 months went by the time March came, I just crashed. I could not move. I had the deepest fatigue I had ever experienced. And I've always struggled with energy all my life, but I just stopped. It was, again, another surrender. And I was off work for 6 weeks, which is unheard of. I'm a worker. I show up, I work hard, I work long, and I'm a worker, and I just stopped. And then I even went back to work only half time, which for someone who, you know, gives them your all, just to show up for 4 hours and leave was like an amazing experience. But during those 6 weeks, I really felt connected to God. I know God. It was such a journey of God. It was all about rest in God. That's the phrase, just rest in God. My husband and I have decided to relocate back to Kentucky. Remember the long timer on her knees? She had that prayer for me, and we're going to do that together. And so in my mind, if you're going to relocate and find new jobs and find a home, you got a lot of work to do. You better be up on your feet, running, making things happen, you know, have an agenda, have a to-do list. Well, God said, no, I want you to flat on your back, and I don't even want you to have enough energy to think. All you're going to do is rest in me. Ah, what a journey to go from needing food to be safe to, like, completely just resting in God. Like, there was no choice. You know, it's sad that it has to be where there's no choice, but that's what it took. And I rested in God, and I have such trust in God. Like, this journey is unfolding. It will all happen. It's all okay. But how this, I want to circle back to my abstinence, the treasure that I did realize when I first got here, because when I got ill, all I could do was sleep and eat. I mean, I was down to the basics. It was just kind of funny because I'd sleep and then eat a full meal. I mean, you'd think I was, you know, a truck driver or something. I was sleeping and then eating these big meals 3 times a day. And I just was so grateful that I knew how to do that. I was this whole journey of finding my health, and I've been using alternative healers and just all sorts of different activity to heal myself. And and that was one of my realizations. I just said heal myself, and I was having that thought, no, God heals this, but no, it's truly I have a responsibility. And that's what happened on March 4th when I couldn't go to work anymore. It's like I have to take responsibility for my health, and I need to do whatever it takes to be healthy. But this baseline of an abstinence and knowing how to do my food, having this relationship, having a healthy relationship with food for over 6 years, I was able to walk through this health crisis and come out the other side. And if I hadn't had that baseline, I don't even think that, you know, people that have helped me get well, that I would have been well enough to get well. You know what I mean? I just look back and I just think, wow. Why do we ever question God? Because it's so clear that He's got it worked out, and that this has been part of my journey, this being getting abstinent so that I'd finally deal with these issues with my health that basically I've struggled and fought with and controlled all my life, and now I finally let go to let God really take care of them. So my level of gratitude, again, I was so grateful when I got asked to share, because I just am so filled up with gratitude for my abstinence, for this program, for God, and for the incredible hope. And, you know, just God is all things. God is love, and God has it all taken care of. So thanks for letting me share. Okay, so we have a few more minutes to do questions, if anyone has any questions. She asked what my daily routine is. And so I call my sponsor. Wake up. And I now I'm doing my reading in the evening, because I couldn't do it all in the morning. So usually I do my readings in the evening, but I save writing about them the next morning. So I will write about what's coming up from the reading, and then I do a letter. I used to only do a letter to God, but recently I've been doing a letter from God, and I think it's mainly because of this illness and being so close to God and being so in need of His direction and His reminder that I'm okay and I'm safe and He's right there. So I've been doing this letter from God. And then I write out my food, and I call my sponsor with the reading or I give her my food. But I don't, recently we haven't really been reading the reading. It's been more about my day and what does my day hold and how is God in my day. I didn't even touch on my work life, because that was a huge surrender about two years ago. And then I pack up my food, and I love this, that I know to not skimp on that. Like just the other day, I actually didn't have time to pack up my food, but before I went into the office, I stopped at Subway and got a salad. Like I just know to take the time now, so I am taken care of throughout the whole day. So I hope that helps. She asked if I had a spiritual practice monthly, daily, yearly. I guess the letter writing is kind of sort of my foundation. And then I do really love retreats, primarily women's retreats. Those have been very, very powerful for me. And I talk to God a lot, just sort of informally. Just, hey, God, you know, that has really proven to be wonderful. And I have two books that I always read, and I've read them for years. And I haven't changed them. I have a lot of books that I could read, but for some reason, those two books I keep sticking with. So, thanks. Okay, so how my marriage has maybe changed my food, or how we work around. I really have it easy. My husband has his own food thing. He's a runner, and we're the Jack Sprat could eat no fat, his wife could eat no lean, you know, that thing. We're the opposite, because I don't really watch my fat intake. Mine's more kind of carbs and other things that I have no business eating. But he doesn't eat fat, so he does all these lean cuisines and protein drinks, and we don't. And I do someday hope to learn. That's my hope and my dream, is to learn how to. He's vegetarian, doesn't want fat, you know, I don't eat dairy. I mean, I'd love to kind of come up with some sort of dish some way that we could both eat. I could prepare and we could eat together. But I don't know my skill level and what is out there, I don't know. So I kind of have it easy that I'm not preparing, you know, food for him or different food. But the other thing that came to mind when you said that, and it's just, I'm so fortunate to have this loving, gentle man in my life who's so aware. He's just very aware. And he knows, have you eaten yet? Have you had your food? You know, he's so on it. And then, you know, that can be a signal that maybe I've misbehaved. But usually it's just him perhaps one step ahead of me of, hey, it's been a long afternoon, or, you know, you'll feel better if you eat your food. And I'm just so grateful to have a partner like that who realizes I need to take care of myself in this area. So, all right. Thank you all.